Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're sitting down with former D.C. Mayor and current Ward 7 Councilman Vincent Gray. We're talking to him tonight about politics, his ward, and D.C.'s future. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Ronnie, calling from Maryland. Ronnie, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, good afternoon, Mr. Hill. Good afternoon, Councilman.
Doing just fine.
How you doing?
Always did like you, man. Always. Councilman, here's my question to you. Not recently, Mr. Fisher, love Mr. Fisher to death, man. Follow him since he, I even follow him on Twitter.
Thank you.
There was, yeah, I do. He had the ward member, ward 8 elect on there. And he had said something that really totally bothered me. And I want to see what your thoughts are. There, you know, of course, you know, you was the mayor. At one time, it was that y'all wanted MPD to move back into the district. And my question to him was, why should I give up $850,000 home and move back into the district when I'm not going to own my own property, where they either worked and bust my butt off and served the citizens? Because I am MPD, and I serve the citizens of the District of Columbia. And when I go home, I want to go home. You know, and my question to you was that, you know, and he made me so upset. It was like, okay, you want me to move back into the district just to get a take-home scout car? I don't want a take-home scout car. I want to be able to go home and be at peace. I'm not saying there's no nice areas in D.C., because there are. But my thing to you, sir, is that but you being a council member now, you can make some of those type of decisions. And my thing is that this, you know, why not some of your council members, why not come to these districts? Why not go to a district and go to the watch commander and say, hey, can I ride with you? And actually see, because he said the morale was low. And I'm going, morale is not low. It's far from being low. The fact of the matter is that now it's actually getting a little bit better, where people actually, you're seeing each other. Because you know for yourself, Councilman, being a mayor, we're a pretty big force.
So let me, Ronnie, stop you there and see if he can at least address the issue of residency, because, you know, that's not just a D.C. issue. Baltimore's new mayor just talked about this some two weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ronnie makes some good points in what he has to say. I just introduced a bill last week, my first set of bills since coming back on the council, and had co-introduces with Councilmember McDuffie and Councilmember Evans. This is a bill that would allow those who live in the city. It doesn't require people, because we can't do that. We can't require people to live in the District of Columbia. But if somebody is a first responder, that being defined in this instance as somebody who's a police officer with Metropolitan Police Department or a firefighter, if this bill were to be enacted, it would allow anybody who lives in the city who's either one of those two roles to not have to pay any district income taxes in the future. So it doesn't require you to live in the District of Columbia. It rewards you for living in the District of Columbia. So if I were, you know, if I were a police officer or a firefighter, I would think twice about moving out of the city, or think twice about staying outside of the city when I have this opportunity available to me. That's going to be thousands of dollars of benefits to those who take advantage of it. What's interesting is that...
You didn't explain it like that. And see, that's why I'm glad I called you. Like I said, I always listen to Mr. Fisher. He has one of the best topics in, like, the world to me. Mm-hmm. And to actually take the time and hear you say that, I feel a lot better, because he made it seem like it was just a big issue. Like, hey, I want MPD to move back in, and this is what it is. It's like, hold on, dude, you're going to end up having MPD go to PG. You know, and lateral straight on over. And nobody don't want to do that, because you get people like me that graduated at a cost.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
I'm a diehard D.C. fan. And, you know, I mean, I'm back when we had the old stadium. When it was Daryl Green and Art Monk and them, so I love D.C.
Okay, right. Ronnie, you're telling your age now.
Exactly. I love D.C. You know, I mean, I'm D.C. to the heart.
But Ronnie, I got to stop you. I've got a lot of folks on the line, but I appreciate that. I do want to know real quick, Councilman, what is the name of that residency incentive bill?
It's the First Responder Income Tax Exclusion Amendment Act of 2017. It's Bill 22-42. And my view is, just to underscore what Ronnie is saying, first of all, I'm a native Washingtonian, too. I love the District of Columbia. But rather than create a punitive situation to try to make people do something, I'm trying to find a way to reward them for coming back and being in the city. We have a lot of police officers who now live outside the city, and firefighters, too, who were born and raised in the District of Columbia, went to schools like Anacostia and Wilson and other schools across the city, and have moved out I'd love to give them a reason to feel like they want to live back in the city now.
Well, Ronnie, thank you so much. And we certainly salute you for your, you know, your service to the district. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Charles calling from Northwest D.C. Thanks for calling, Charles. What's on your mind?
Hi, good evening, Councilman.
Hi, Charles.
Hey, how are you?
I live in River Terrace in Ward 7,
mm-hmm.
and I have a question about DCRA in particular, but my question is this. Right next to my property is an abandoned property, and DCRA, there's been an issue with a tree growing along the line of that property and onto mine, and I asked DCRA to look into it. They told me that after it went through a special abatement process, they can get involved, but then they went on to say that they would address everything regarding that property except the tree, because they don't do trees, which I thought was rather odd. And so I was wondering your thoughts on that.
Well, first of all, if the tree is on city property, which could be the case, sometimes the property that people think is their own is also part of the public space, as it's called. So that would be my first question, Charles, you ought to ask them, and that is it in public space or is it on private property, which would be your property? If it's in public space, that means that the city owns the tree. And there are Department of Transportation, there is a component that deals with trees. They have people who call arborists who actually work with the trees. So that's the question you ought to ask DCRA. Did they tell you that because it's in another section of the District of Columbia? Or did they tell you that because the tree is on your property and therefore your responsibility? So I think you ought to double back with them and ask them those two questions. If it's on your property, it's your tree, and you have the responsibility for it. And there are prohibitions even in cutting down trees at this stage. I just had a conversation with someone just a couple of weeks ago about they are trying to build a house on a piece of property they own, and there's a possibility of being assessed fines of between $65,000 and $70,000 for removing a couple of trees off that property. So you can imagine the incentive to build a house is largely gone at this point.
Well, Charles, thank you so much for your phone call, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking to D.C.'s Ward 7 council member Vincent Gray, the former mayor. I want to go back to the phones in just a minute, but there's some questions that I want to make sure that I get in. Ronnie was talking about public safety and police officers and the like. Peter Newsham is still the interim chief. There doesn't seem to have been a lot of movement in making a decision by the mayor to make him or anyone else the chief. Certainly that could change tomorrow or next month. What is your view of the job that he's doing? And if he were to go before the council as the new chief designee, would you vote for him?
Well, I would want to look, you know, closely at the work that he's done, not only as the interim chief, but even before that. And there are certainly some good things that Chief Newsham has done as a longstanding member of the Metropolitan Police Department. But what I would want to know, Harold, is what as chief are you going to do that's innovative? You know, we had Chief Ramsey, who happened to see earlier today at the U.S. Conference of Mayors meeting, and I had a chance to talk with him. He did some really wonderful things as chief here. Kathy Lanier, who I was delighted to be able to retain as the chief of police, did a number of wonderful things. So I'd want to know more about what Chief Newsham is proposing. That would be innovative. That would be different. And frankly, I'd want to hear from others who are potential candidates to be the chief. And I'd want to base my conclusions on, one, what is the experience of the potential chief coming in? What is your track record for reducing homicides in the areas where you've been a chief previously? What is your track record in terms of working with community policing, engaging people in the activities of policing a particular area, which sounds, you know, obvious on its face, but is not so easy to do? So I'm not prepared to say tonight whether I would support Chief Newsham or not if he really is the nominee, and we'll have to wait and just see whether that happens or not. But those are the kinds of questions that I would ask him, Harold. And also, what is he going to do to make sure that we continue to build the force of police officers in the city? I have a bill that I introduced just last week at the council session last week, along with a co-introducer was Councilmember Evans. It would raise our authorized strength from 4,000 up to 4,200. Would add 200 police officers. The importance of that is the increasing sophistication of what we're seeing, you know, in terms of how people are committing crimes, and then just the sheer growth of the District of Columbia. We're adding about 1,000, 1,200 people a month. We're up to 681,000 people who live in the District of Columbia now, and that argues almost by itself for an increased police force or increased sophistication in techniques. And also, what would be the way in which you would deal with some of the attrition that we're seeing at this stage? We've had some months when the attrition is as low as 20, and we've had some months when we've lost as many as 70 or 75 police officers, some to retirement, some to people who've been recruited to go to other jurisdictions, and some who frankly just don't want to work in the District of Columbia anymore for any number of reasons. So I'd want to hear his thoughts on that, and he may want to get out there himself and talk about those issues at this stage. I've advanced thoughts, you know, that would, you know, give additional incentives to keep people around. People can retire after 20 years on the police force. That means you got people who are as young as 44, 45 years old who are leaving MPD to go on and do other things. There are ways, I think, financial incentives, other incentives, educational incentives, that would keep people here doing things for their family. Maybe, you know, financing the educational, you know, educational support for people who are the family members of police officers to be able to give them a reason to be able to stay on the force. Sure. So having a strong force and a force that is committed and wants to be able to continue to work there is a huge part of what a chief's job is.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Reggie calling from Fort Washington. Thanks for calling, Reggie. What's on your mind?
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Reggie Winter. I've known
I know Reggie very well.
Since the early 80s.
Yeah.
And Harold Fisher was very gracious to call me when Nadine passed, and we did an interview. So I just want to thank you guys, first of all.
Well, your mother was a wonderful council member also, Reggie, and I don't mind saying, not only do I mind saying it, I'm happy to say what a wonderful person she was.
And actually, the two of you were her favorite people. I want to, let me comment on that, because people don't understand. I've explained to people, why is he running the game? It's in the blood. Gray has been doing it so long, I can't see him doing much else. I met him back in the 80s when the foundation, when Julius Hobson and I were, you know, helping the foundation, and it's been ongoing ever since. So he can't help himself, folks.
I'm a public servant at heart. In fact, as you well know, Reggie, I didn't get into politics until 2006 when I became a council member then. I was working in a nonprofit community then.
Reggie, go ahead and ask your question. I've got a break coming up real quick.
Right. Mm-hmm. No, oddly enough, I live in River Terrace as well. I used to, the Neighborhood Stabilization Program was a great program. And when people, you know, their lawn, their house looked bad, and the windows were all out, they used to come out and fix that thing very, very quickly. I hope we can bring the program back, or at least enhance the program that's there. River Terrace is one of those communities that's changing and growing, and that was one of the things that got people to fix their homes up. So, Council Member, Mayor Gray, I hope we can reinstate the Neighborhood Stabilization Program and get folks to clean up their property.
Hold that point. I'll let him respond to it on the other side. Also, we're going to talk to Julian in Northwest D.C., and after that, also, I have some other political questions for the council member from Ward 7 here in the District of Columbia, Vincent Gray. We'll be back in just a moment. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation with former D.C. Mayor and current Ward 7 Councilman Vincent Gray. Before the break, we were talking to Reggie, and he was talking about a neighborhood stabilization program.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was an excellent program, and Reggie's absolutely right. You know, I don't know whether the program will be brought back or not, because this will be the mayor's decision to do that at this stage. But, you know, what undergirds that is people helping people. And that's always been a community spirit in the District of Columbia. And I hope we can continue to do those kinds of things. River Terrace is a, and this is the community that, Reggie alluded to, is a really solid community. It's a lot, really, a lot of solid, good people who live in River Terrace. And I was delighted to work with them. I've been to two or three meetings at River Terrace just in the last two or three months. Actually, I was there for the swearing in of their offices for the new Civic Association. And they have a problem, too, that we're going to try to work on. And that is they're being charged to have their meetings in a school, a public school, the River Terrace Education campus. It doesn't make any sense to me. If people are willing to come out at night, go to a meeting, try to wrestle with the difficult problems of being a community and moving forward their community, and River Terrace has excellent attendance at those meetings, why should we charge them? They should be able to use that building without cost to that civic association. You know, we just did the math one night, and based on where they are right now and based on the cost that they're going to incur, by June they'll have no money. Mm-hmm. And that can't be the desired outcome that we would have, and that is to break the treasury of a civic association where people are working hard to make sure they have resources and giving their own time, their own sweat, their own energy to make the community better.
Okay. Well, Reggie, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I want to get in a couple of our political questions here. Republican Congressman Jason Chaffetz has just last week said that he will use the power of Congress to block the D.C. doctor-prescribed suicide law that just passed. Your thoughts specifically about that and more broadly how the district is once again, even with a new administration, still has to battle Congress?
Well, you know, I don't want to speak just specifically on one bill, because the reality is that we ought to have the same rights, the same authority that any other jurisdiction in America has. Any other state legislative body, any other county legislative body, any other municipal legislative body, the Congress would not go in and interfere with the decision-making. Maybe there are individual members that don't agree with those decisions. But last time I looked, we live in a constitutionally guaranteed country that says there's free speech and that people are empowered to make those decisions. This is the only jurisdiction in America where the Congress would step in and try to undermine, if you will, try to overturn decisions that have been made by the legislature. And this won't be the first time. You know, we've got an outstanding congresswoman in Eleanor Holmes Norton,
who is now recovering from surgery right now, and so certainly we wish her the best of health. But
absolutely.
Please continue.
And she has been an outstanding member now for 25 or 26 years representing the District of Columbia. I don't know every congressman who's up there, but if there's anyone that's more able than she is, that would be a shocker to me. She is the person who represents us. Yes, she can't even cast a vote in the Congress. It's time for that to stop. You know, with all due respect to Congressman Chaffetz, whatever bill you want to talk about that's been passed by the District of Columbia, we shouldn't even have to undergo that. We should have legislative autonomy, which Congresswoman Norton has been fighting for. As mayor, I fought for that. I will continue to fight with my colleagues on the council for that. We shouldn't even have to undergo this 30-day review that we have to undergo now, when some congressional representative or some senator can impose her or his will on the city to overturn the things that we have adopted through, you know, great thought, deliberation, hearings, an incredibly long period of time in many instances. Why should we have to go through that? Whether it's the death and dying bill, whether it's a marijuana bill, reproductive rights bill, those are decisions that should rest with the people of the District of Columbia, not a member of Congress.
Julian, calling from Northwest. Thanks for calling, Julian. What's on your mind?
Hi. Good evening, gentlemen. Mr. Gray, my name is Julian. I used to work with D.C. ARC, where you were on the Board of Trustees back in the 90s. And I met you, and I was quite impressed with you as a individual and the type of person, a type of leader. But my question is this. Being that you were unfairly treated in the last mayoral election, are you going to try to run in the next mayoral election?
You know, that's a question I get, Jill, you know, probably 5 or 6 times a day. and I had it. It was in one place today where I was asked 6 times, maybe 8 times, if I was going to run again. Mm-hmm. And it's not a decision that I have made. I made the decision to represent the people of Ward 7 at this stage, and I'm going to do the best job I possibly can to represent them. I'm also serving as the chair, thanks to the appointment of Chairman Mendelson. I'm serving as the chair of the Health Committee. I'm looking forward to being able to make progress on that front. There's some things I would like to have done even as mayor. And, of course, as you indicated, we were short-circuited in the opportunity to continue to do that.
Right. But certainly, being candid, I mean, certainly it's something that you have considered at least, haven't you?
Well, you can't help but think about it, Harold. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was ready to continue as mayor. Obviously, I wouldn't have run for re-election otherwise. And, you know, when people put the question in front of you every day, it would be very disrespectful not to think seriously about that. But it's not a decision that I've made at this stage. It will be something down the road that will come.
Julian, thank you so much for your phone call. Thank you for calling. Right. Are you going to the inauguration on Friday?
No.
Why not?
I really don't believe that. I just don't want to participate in the inauguration. I supported Hillary Clinton. She lost. I'm not sure whether she was fairly treated or not. We had that discussion earlier in this broadcast about, you know, what happened with her and FBI Director Comey, and to whatever extent that interfered with her ability to be the president of the United States. So I hardly supported Hillary Clinton. I want to support a president, but I want a president who's going to support this city. If we've got a president now who's going to continue to tread on the District of Columbia to interfere with our decision-making, it's hard for me to be able to feel supportive of that. And I've seen nothing yet that would suggest to me that he is going to vociferously, vocally advocate for the people of the District of Columbia. Harold, we have more people living in the District of Columbia than the entire state of Wyoming. We have more people living in the District of Columbia than the entire state of Vermont. Nobody is suggesting that they should not have voting representation. Nobody would form their lips to say that or to interfere with the legislation that's passed at a state, county, and municipal level in those two states. I want to hear Mr. Trump stand up and say he hardly supports the right of the people of the District of Columbia to make decisions for ourselves. He will raise his right hand and take the oath to be president, and presumably that will be to support the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence and the other important documents that govern the lives of people in the United States of America. That should include the people of the District of Columbia as well. It does not at this stage. I want to hear him support that.
And with that said, and obviously those sentiments are not unfamiliar to a lot of people, not only in the District of Columbia, but right now some 60 members of the House, Democrats. But when the Republicans are still trying to play political hopscotch with the president-elect, how should the District of Columbia deal with a President Trump, a Trump administration, so that the city can continue to not only survive but to thrive?
And we are thriving. You look at our financial condition at this stage. When I came into office, we weren't broke by any stretch. We had money in the bank that was for a congressionally imposed reserve fund, which is another issue unto itself. And we had money in our bond escrow fund. We had about $600 million in the bank. All of it was committed to something. We had no undesignated dollars, if you will. When I left office, we had $1.87 billion in the bank. We now have over $2 billion in the bank. There are virtually no states that can claim that. So I would like to be respected, you know, like a person who is, you know, a resident, a citizen of the United States of America. I would like to see that respect. And frankly, along the way, we need to continue to stand up for those things that are important to the people of the District of Columbia.
We want to be treated in a democracy.
But is there
living in a democracy just like everybody else?
But is there a strategy, for example, that you would recommend that Mayor Bowser or any other person, including yourself, in leadership in the district, in order to deal with the unorthodox management and administrative style of Mr. Trump?
Well, frankly, one of the things I've said is that I don't write people off just because they have an R by their name, and I don't write people in just because they have a D mm-hmm. by their name. We've seen, for example, Republicans who have been strong advocates and proponents for the District of Columbia. Tom Davis, who was a Republican congressman from Northern Virginia, worked very hard to try to get a vote for our non-voting delegate in the Congress and in the House of Representatives, and fell just short of making that happen. There was a deal that had been worked out in which Utah would get an additional representative, the District of Columbia would get a voting delegate, a voting representative for our city. And it fell short. There were poison pills that were thrown in by other members of Congress. I worked with a person who I was proud to work with, Darrell Issa, who was a congressman from California. He stood up with us when the federal government was being closed down by Senator Cruz and others on the Hill. We had a press conference on the grounds of the Congress, on the Senate grounds, and he stood with us. He had legislation that was ready to move forward, and we couldn't get it moved forward, but he was ready to do that. So I think we've got to find those people who are advocates for us who may have R behind their name. There are a lot of people now, I think, on the Republican side who will stand up for the Affordable Care Act, which is going to be a great challenge for us in this city and others if there are changes that are made. So my strategy would be, give everybody a chance to say they won't work with us. Give them a chance to say they will work with us. And don't make it on the basis of whether they have R or D behind their name.
Well, Ward 7, Councilmember Vincent Gray, former mayor of the District of Columbia, thank you so much for coming in. We appreciate it. Again, congratulations on your win. I'm sure we'll be seeing you on the council.
Thank you, Harold.
All right. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, January 18th, 2017. I'm Harold Fisher. You can reach me on Facebook at Harold Fisher WHUR or Twitter at H Fisher WHUR. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR.